I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello, and welcome to the Don't Know Her podcast. I'm Michael.
And I'm Scott.
And we are here, as usual, to talk about an actor who has blessed the silver screen, but not quite as much as some of her contemporaries and as much as we really would love to have seen. And who are we talking about today, Scott?
We are talking about the magnetic, magnificent Samantha Morton.
Yes. And this is someone you were very keen to talk about.
Yes. No, I was. I think I have always found her to be an incredibly powerful screen presence. And I think, and as we'll go through this episode, you'll understand, she is very, very respected and fairly decorated as an actress. However, I do feel like perhaps not as recognisable as others who would have the same sort of output as her. So when she is on good form, she's the best of the best, I think. As simple as that, really, for me. So I was very keen to do her for the pod.
What you've just said about her maybe not being as recognisable as some of her contemporaries, I think, is really why she fits the bill. Like, yes. She is, say, a Toni Collette, where I think people wouldn't connect all of Samantha Morton's parts together with one actor.
Yes.
So, like, Minority Report, yeah, great, but is that the same woman that was in America? Don't know. Like, Irish people love In America, or loved when it came out. No. It was a big deal. Jim Sheridan, of course, from My Left Foot, and plenty of other Irish movies, like In the Name of the Father. Irish people flocked to that film. But I don't know if Samantha Morton's name would have been like, that's what, this is the person we have to remember. These are all the parts she's done. I just think she gets lost in the role in a really positive way in terms of talent and performance quality. But yeah, because she is also, she has the personality and charisma to be a star alongside her contemporaries, say like a Tilda Swinton or Cate Blanchett or all these people that would have been up and coming in the 90s, noughties, and establishing themselves, up and coming. They would have definitely all have been established by the noughties. But yeah, so I was delighted when we decided to focus an episode on Samantha.
Yes. And it's interesting what you say, because I think you're right. But she is incredibly memorable in a way, perhaps, and maybe this is why I was drawn to her. I would remember her for everything, whereas I often will need to go back to remember somebody in a film. But with her, and I'm not sure why, she is incredibly, like, I can't really shake her. And I don't know if it's because maybe the first encounter I perhaps had with her, I assume might have been Minority Report. And maybe in that there's a sort of alienness to it. And I don't know if I then associate that with her, or if there is something about her which is sort of alien in a really intriguing and exciting way. I can understand, and I know a lot of it was by choice, but why she would be an auteur-type filmmaker's star. And she did sort of choose to be that person in her younger acting life. But I can fully understand why she is consistently chosen by certain types of filmmakers as well.
For sure. And I think, you know, she obviously does do big budget things.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
John Carter or Fantastic Beasts.
Yes.
And Where to Find Them. Is that correct?
I think it's something to that effect.
Harry Potter, yes. prequel film. She doesn't make it to the second one, I believe. God, I've
no,
seen
that's
this film.
True.
But yeah, and she says openly in interviews and stuff, she's not interested in doing photo shoots or that part of celebrity. She's interested in the work, which is, again, like her contemporaries. You know, we can say all you will about, you know, some of the greatest actors, particularly female actors that we have had. Again, like Tilda Swinton or Cate Blanchett or those types, Kate Winslet. They talk about the work and they're, you know, that's what they're doing it for. But you'll also see them as the face of L'Oreal or something. Do you know, like, they are selling themselves as much as they sell the movies in terms of their career. And Samantha Morton doesn't seem to have prioritized that. I think she is really extraordinary. I've always really liked her. Have always been really happily surprised when she's turned up in TV work as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be like, oh, what's she doing this for? When she should be, you know, working with Scorsese or whoever it would be. But still absolutely delighted when she turns up. Yeah, I really like her, and I can't wait to get into her career.
Mm. No, it's also fun you say that, because I remember when you saw The Whale for the first time, which is one of her big moments from this year, that you, and I hadn't seen it, and I hadn't, at that point there was perhaps no trailers or anything, and you were like, do you know who appears in this film? And I was like, my gosh, like, who could this possibly be? And it was Samantha Morton, so you were obviously delighted by her appearance. Like, she was like it was the cameo of all time.
But also, like, frustrated, because really she should be, you know, built, if that was Nicole Kidman or anyone, many other people of the same, I was going to say quality of acting, but of the same sort of generation or the same sort of CV, then they would have had a credit. Like, they would have been talked about that they were in the film. So I was a little bit confused to why it was a secret Samantha Morton was in The Whale. And also, we haven't really, like, that hasn't even been a thing talked about.
Not
when
really.
They've been promoting it. Yeah. And even with She Said, which is another film that's come out recently with Samantha Morton in it, she was somewhat overshadowed in terms of conversations around it. Like, if you talk about awards, they were pushing Carey Mulligan, sorry. I've only recently realised I've been saying that wrong the whole time. It's Carey, not Carrie. Carey Mulligan.
So it's supposed to be Carey. I mean, that makes sense with the spelling, but
sure
I've
does.
Always done Carey Mulligan.
It's Ariana DeBose's song, which confused me at first, and I was like, oh, wait, that's how you say Carey. Anyway, or Carey? Oh, now I don't know what's going on. Anyway, but, you know, Carey Mulligan was being pushed as supporting actress, whereas really Samantha Morton could have had a moment to had recognition for what a wonderfully powerful scene, and She Said. But again, if that was a Nicole Kidman or a Cate Blanchett or Tilda Swinton or anyone of that ilk, they probably would have got a moment, or I don't know, something about Samantha Morton is at odds with the industry, and I think that's what makes her really exciting. But also then it's like, oh, I just wish the industry would open the doors a bit more to allow her to have opportunities that so many of her contemporaries get.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think these two films from the past year, as you say, are great examples of the fact that she will out-act everyone else.
My God, I don't understand you, Charlie.
Every time I call and ask you how she's doing, you say, she's fine. If she's so evil, then...
What was I supposed to tell you, huh? That she was off making her classmates cry or slashing her teacher's tires?
She's giving it socks. I mean, she's screaming at him in that sequence, and is frustrated. And so, yeah, and she's also able to, like, calibrate her tone to fit the overall film, even though she's only in it for a bit. Yeah, she's really powerful. I'd say her bit in She Said and her bit in The Whale are my favourite bits of those films.
Yeah, and we will talk about some of her more leading work, and it is incredibly powerful, and we should have more of it, but she is also such a reliable hire to have turn up for these shorter moments if needed. Again, should be getting more, would be more impactful if she was getting more, but even in these bits, it's always like, oh my goodness, yes, you're here, brilliant, this is going to only get better.
She's such a dependably charismatic performer.
Mm, yeah, no, for sure. I said that I thought my first point in with Samantha was Minority Report, I think. What about you?
I assume it was Minority Report as well. There is, like, I saw Sweet and Lowdown at some point around then, but I can't really put my finger on which was first, but I saw both of them very close together. the Woody Allen film in which she was Oscar nominated for Best Supporting Actress and stars alongside Sean Penn and Uma Thurman. Both of those performances are so different to what else was happening around that time. So they're very, you know, in Sweet and Lowdown, she's a mute character, and in Minority Report, she is a precog who essentially is like wired in a pool of water to give psychic readings of what's going to happen, murders in the future. And so they're pretty silent, both of them. Like, they're very expressive. There was something about the style of performance that was so different to lots of things that were going on at the time. And Samantha Morton as a actor just seems so different to all the other people at the time. So yeah, I found her really exciting at that point, but I couldn't tell you which of those would be the first one. And then in America, I remember very vividly going to cinema, but I would have already seen maybe both of the in Sweet and Lowdown and Minority Report by that time.
Right. Okay. And so, I think that makes sense. I think it could be hard to pin down. Also, she's a very busy actress, so there would be lots of things that could have been.
For sure, yeah. So yeah, she, in my mind, she just always was famous. Like, I don't remember her being up and coming, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So maybe I just assumed she'd been around much longer. Like, I definitely didn't see Morven Callor until I did my master's in film. Right. And that was a film we studied. And what a film to watch and rewatch. And, you know, what a hypnotizing performance by Samantha, but we'll of course focus on that movie because it's so important, I think, to film in general, but to Lynn Ramsey and to Samantha's careers.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess I should also say at the top, before we start going to the career, I mean, you asked this question and I just sort of talked about why I wanted to speak about her, but I guess specifically this is us leading up to the Oscars ceremony 2023 at the point we're recording now. And I suppose another reason I was drawn to talking about her specifically at this time is, and I will cite specifically She Said in this case, I think that she should have been nominated for that role. It is very, very small. It would be a very, very short supporting nomination. However, the impact and power and necessity of it, it kind of fulfills in the same way that maybe we have Judd Hirsch this year in The Fabelmans, although he has more screen time. It feels like that similar, someone coming in to drive the story, the catalyst person, and she is incredible in it. I think the power and weight of what she's bringing is second to none.
Yeah, of course Samantha should have been at least in the conversation. But yeah, she is really brilliant. So yeah.
Good. She is really brilliant. Well, let us dive into the brilliance that is Samantha Morton. So, Samantha was born on the 13th of May 1977 in Nottingham. Following her parents' divorce a couple of years after her birth, Samantha lived with her father up until I think it was around the age of 8. But following issues that she had with both parents when she was growing up, in that neither of them were particularly fit at that point in time to look after her or her siblings, she was made a ward of court at the age of 11, and then would spend the next 9 years or so living between, I believe she said, 12 sets of foster parents and children's homes as well. And I won't go too much into these struggles. There are podcasts where she talks very openly about it. I would direct you towards her Desert Island Discs episode or the Annie Mac podcast Changes. And she does talk a lot about what it was. But it's very, very important to recognise this is an actress, as she describes herself, coming from the underclasses of Britain and rising up to ultimately, as she's also said, finding herself in dream career sort of terrain. So it's a really amazing story and an amazing journey that she's been on through some really hard times. So really, really impressive. And during these difficult years, as we'll call them, L for Life, it was a teacher at school in Nottinghamshire who told her that she should do drama. She says that she didn't even know what drama really was at this point, but with their advice went along to an audition for an after-school drama club. Now, I think this is what is called the Nottingham Central Junior Television Workshop, which she started at when she was roughly 13. And it was through attending this workshop that she began to learn her craft, and did so for 3 years. And also from this would land her first on-screen roles as well in TV, in shows such as Soldier, Soldier and Boone, both in 1991. And she feels that it is that authenticity from her difficult background that ultimately led to her power on screen, and was grateful for the opportunity to work on the technical elements of the craft to become even better than she naturally was. Morton then moves to London at the age of 16. In 1994, she would continue her run of work in some other well-watched UK TV series, such as Peak Practice, which is the moment she also cites as a real turning point in her career. So Peak Practice is, or was, I should say, a fairly well-loved TV show that ran for many years. And it was the push of a gentleman she met called Ian Smith who got her this role and encouraged her to go for this in Peak Practice that sort of took her out of a time in her life where she maybe was exploring rave culture and drug taking, things like this a little bit more. And it was the involvement in this show and things moving forward that kind of brought her onto the path that she would then follow. Alongside Peak Practice, she also stars in Cracker. In 1985, she took on a regular role in Band of Gold, which was a Kay Mellor show. It was then 96 where things really start to pick up, though. She stars in a TV movie adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma, playing Harriet Smith. And then, similarly, in 97, she would play the title role in a TV movie adaptation of Jane Eyre, including a lot of either potential Don't Know Her Darlings or specifically Don't Know Her Darlings, such as the wonderful Joanna Scanlon. 1997's indie drama, though, Under the Skin, is a real pivotal moment in her career. A film directed by Karin Adler, it tells the story of a woman dealing with the death of her mother and then sort of along the way going headlong into an exploration of her sexuality. And this is where we really see critics start screaming about her and where she was really getting those great reviews. She receives the Boston Society of Film Critics Best Actress Award here, as well as a nomination for the BIFFA Award for Best Female Performance, and then gaining the attention of some other filmmakers, which we'll go on to talk about in a moment. But I think you have seen Under the Skin. Is there anything you want to mention on this film?
Just that it's really terrific. Like, I think this is a film that really should be celebrated more. It's a shame that Karin Adler hasn't made more films as well. Like Samantha Morton and Claire Rush Burke play sisters. Rita Tushingham is their mother. They're all terrific, but it's Samantha Morton. Like, wow, what a performance.
What are you doing wearing Mum's coat? Why have you got a wig on?
I felt like it.
I don't think it's right, Iris. It's spooky.
Shall I tell you what's spooky, shall I? All that love and marriage and Christmas together shit. That is well spooky. I can't stand it. I'd rather murder myself.
And I don't know if the Jonathan Glazer Under the Skin is directly influenced, but there is, like, aesthetically, they are dressed very similar. And there is something about, as you were mentioning earlier, like this otherworldliness to Samantha Morton that I think Scarlett Johansson picks up on in the Jonathan Glazer film. So I highly recommend it. Yeah, it's really, really great. And there's such, like, interesting dynamics between this sister who is buttoned up and more conservative and Samantha Morton, who is exploring her sexuality and what she wants her role to be in the world and how she wants to enjoy life. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, I mean, it's one that in the prep I was annoyed I hadn't caught up with, so I will do my best to make sure I do. But yes, as I said, that that film really was where people were taking a look at her. And one of those people was Woody Allen, who would then cast her in Sweet and Low Down off the back of this. And it was her performance in this 1999 film that gained Samantha her first of two Oscar nominations. In this case, for Best Supporting Actress. Here, Morton plays Hattie, a mute laundress who is the love interest of Sean Penn's character, who is a sort of, I think it's set in the 1930s, and he is a very egotistical jazz guitarist. I think he also mentions himself that he considers that he is the second best guitarist in the world, apparently.
He's basically playing the Woody Allen character in the Woody Allen film, you know, like the kind of modest, but also calling themselves the second best, you know, this sort of style, problems with romance, all the same things you expect of a Woody Allen film. And yeah, had you seen it before?
No, this was my first time watching this one. I think it was one that had been on the radar for me for a while. I wasn't expecting this, though, maybe in a good way, actually. I think it was, although very similar to other Woody Allen projects, it also feels quite different in many ways. There's a kind of mockumentary element to it where people like Woody Allen himself talking to camera about Sean Penn's character as if, you know, he is a real figure. And I think that sort of brought it to life in an interesting way, whilst also kind of grounding it in the sort of Woody Allen universe, if that's such a thing. But yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I thought she was really lovely in it. Considering she's playing a mute character who doesn't have any lines of dialogue, I like that she herself describes the character as a chatterbox. Like, if she could speak, she would be a chatterbox. And as soon as she said that, I was like, wow, that is exactly what I see. The kind of light and life that she is bringing to her, everything that's going on in her face, you can hear, or it's not even, you obviously can't hear, but you can sort of feel her mind racing and thinking. And
but you're right, like it does feel like you hear.
Yeah, you
like
do.
It's I think that is one of my favourite performances in a Woody Allen films, which is to say an awful lot, really.
Sure.
We've probably talked about Woody Allen performances a lot with Diane Wiest and other people I can't think of off the top of my head. But she is so, because expressive is the wrong word here, because she is expressive, but she's just communicating everything in such a detailed way. And the way Sean Penn in particular, like I'm thinking of that last sequence where she sat at a bench and, you know, she's happy with her life. Like, she loves life, it seems.
Yeah.
And he wants way more. Again, you can look at Manhattan or so many other Woody Allen movies for a certain same sort of discovery and same sort of scene. But her reactions and her interactions with Sean Penn's character makes you believe that, like, all you need in life is to be happy, and all you want is to be her friend and to have her presence in your life. I think there's a lot, like, the film is you know, using her as a device, but also giving her a platform to be able to showcase this talent. But God, like, I do think my thing with the film is that when Samantha Morton's not on screen, which is often, I do think the film suffers a lot.
Yeah.
And like Uma Thurman and all that sort of glamorous part and the parties and all that, I find less interesting than Samantha Morton, you know, finding love and happiness for a bit and kind of being swept up in this musician's life.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta go, and there's no way you can come with me. Right? I mean, you got responsibilities. You got a job. Oh, you have underwear and socks to wash. And All right, look, if you come, it's not a free ride. All right? I'm not a charity organization. Right, you know, I don't know what I'm doing.
But yeah, it's a very deserving nomination.
Yeah.
She lost to Angelina Jolie, I believe.
Yeah, and I actually read somewhere that Samantha Morton was considered for that part.
Yeah. Samantha Morton is a funny one because there's so many,
yeah,
so many casting trivias in terms of what she might have been in or she wanted to do or who's been cast in her roles. But yeah, yeah, it is an interesting one that she could have done. I mean, I believe, you know, Angelina Jolie won for a lot of excitement of, you know, her being part of Hollywood royalty. And, you know, I don't think Samantha Morton was going to win,
yeah,
for Girl Interrupted, but it would have been interesting to see her in that role.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, that would have been an incredibly different take on that character. But it is. This is a very deserving nomination. I think she's doing so much with it. And even though, yeah, the film suffers a lot when she's not there, and the film would have suffered way more had it not been written the way it was at the end for her. That moment where she is kind of like, I am happy, and everything's kind of going right for me, don't need you, but sorry for you type thing. It's so...
Just her sitting on that bench and, oh, yeah, I think, and the way they've styled her or costumed her, I honestly don't know what it is about that character. And this does happen a lot with Woody Allen sometimes when you watch a film, like, oh, overall it's not great, but there's like a character or a storyline that resonates in some way because... Yeah. It's glorious, this, I think, and it's a shame. It's a lesser Woody Allen film, but also, in general, people aren't going to be seeking out Woody Allen films anyway now. So I think Sweet and Lowdown and that performance may not be something remembered in 20 years' time.
And beyond the Oscar here, she also gets other nominations like the Golden Globe and Los Angeles Film Critics Association. She won the London Critics Circle Film Award for Best Supporting Actress for Sweet and Lowdown. So that's not nothing. So yay for that.
Yeah.
And then talking about the Oscar, at the time that she found out she was nominated, she was heavily pregnant and said she was just really, really happy. And it was at that point she kind of, when talking about it, she says, like, coming from the childhood that she had, it was that kind of sense that dreams can come true, and it was this feeling that would propel her forward with a sense of kind of delight to want to be involved in other things. And every time an opportunity was coming up, and when you hear her talking about films, she so often is just like, I was so happy to be there. I love being on set. I just always love it. I'm so happy. I'm so lucky. And I think that's fascinating. And we were talking about this before, but maybe worth kind of just dropping in here, that it's very interesting looking at the success, very deservedly, that Barry Keoghan is having this year with Banshees of Inisherin. Also himself being someone who was in the care system when he was in a child and probably had some similar experiences and maybe also wouldn't have imagined his career trajectory to be what it was, but is now having great successes and is one of the most talented and wonderful actors working. So they certainly have that in common. Talking more about the Oscar after the fact, in a 2007 interview with The Guardian, Morton actually acknowledged the value of that nomination on her following success, especially in the US. She notes that it would mean she could get smaller pictures funded, and it was grateful, she was grateful, I should say, of being able to positively contribute to the industry in this way. It gave her the sense of power and being able to help and drive projects forward she was interested in. And then from that, over the next few years, we see her star in a handful of indie films where she would continue to garner awards traction and that critical attention. In 1999, she starred in Jesus's Son, gaining a Satellite Award nomination, and then she played opposite Rupert Graves in Catherine Lindstrom's 1950s set romantic drama Dreaming of Joseph Lees, where she won the Evening Standard British Film Award for Best Actress, and then she would receive her second BIFFA nomination for Julian Temple's Pandemonium in 2000. But 2002 is where things are wildly exciting. I mean, this is an extraordinary year, with some of the most crucial entries in her filmography appearing here. So it is here that we get her in Steven Spielberg's Minority Report, Lynn Ramsey's Morven Callor, and Jim Sheridan's In America. And for that film, she was nominated for her second of two Oscars, this time in the leading actress category. But three big films, three films we'll definitely want to talk about. Where would you like to start, Michael?
Let's go like the full hog, like a film of I think most people will have seen if they're listening, or at least remember her for, perhaps Minority Report, which was such a big deal when it came out. Like, I remember the teaser posters just having, you know, that bluish black gray thing title with like Cruise and Spielberg, like just their surnames on it. I loved Minority Report when I saw it in the cinema, and I've seen it so many times. It was one of the first DVDs I bought. It's one of my favorite, I mean, if not my favorite Spielberg film.
Whoa, okay, right, go on. You're going to have to tell us
more.
Well,
sorry, okay, well, the story in a nutshell, because I don't want to spoil anything, but the setup is Tom Cruise works in a detective agency type thing, and there are three siblings who are called precogs, and they can predict future murders. So it's, you know, bringing down the crime rate in this dystopian world. But who else but Tom Cruise is seen as a future murderer? And all hell breaks loose.
Oh my.
And he, you know, well, I say teams up, but that kind of indicates that Samantha Morton's character has agency in that section. He kidnaps Agatha, Samantha Morton's character, and he wants to, because they have alternate memories to each other, and he wants to find out, because she's the best precog, he wants to find out if she has an alternative memory or future memory where he isn't the murderer. But that's really not what the film is interested in after a time. It's much more interested, as with all Spielberg films, family, purpose, grief. And that comes from both Tom Cruise's character, but also Samantha Morton's. I like the film in so many ways, or for so many reasons. But A, its tone and setting and this dystopian world, it's based on a Philip K. Dick, that's correct, right? My God, Philip K. Dick book. It is really rich in terms of looking at a future world and how a society would deal with increasing crime and technology. It also has Tom Cruise on such a great form in terms of a movie star performance in an intelligent drama. Do you know, like, I don't think we get many mainstream films like this anymore. And it's exciting. Like, the action sequences are exciting, but at the heart of it, there's a mystery which I think is more around Samantha Morton's character, which, as that's revealed and becomes more central to the plot, is really rich. Like, it's a really rich exploration, and something which I think Spielberg is great most of the time. Like, I love so many of his films, but there's something about this film which hits home in a bigger way for his big entertainment pieces. So I don't really know why. That's not a very articulate way to explain why I think it's one of my favorites. I just think it ticks the box of a big action movie with a huge amount to say about the world, and it's not overly sentimental. Like, it is sentimental, but it's not to the degree of so many of his other movies, which is something I actually am a little bit allergic to.
Right.
And I think, Samantha Morton is fantastic. I think the cast here are all fantastic. Like, you even have Lois Smith turning up for a scene, and she's terrific.
Yeah, she is. It is, I guess, a standout in his career as what feels to be, it is a layered and complex action film, but it is more pure action and, yes, less sentimental than perhaps where he'd kind of gone into otherwise the sci-fi terrain, like with AI. It is, I think, a really fun and exciting entry in his filmography, because it does stand out. It's one I hadn't watched in a long time. I was very, very excited to go back and watch it. And I enjoyed it so much. I'm a big Spielberg fan anyway. Talking of Spielberg, Samantha would describe working with Spielberg as a gift. She cites him as a genius, says he's very kind, fatherly, made the set feel like a very comfortable space for her, and it was an experience that she would never forget. And in this, maybe that's why we get such a committed performance from her. I mean, this is having to give quite extreme levels of vulnerability in terms that she is, in kind of many ways, even though she's kind of hyper-conscious in terms of how she can look into the future, in sort of a present state, is incredibly vulnerable and switched off from that. So when she's kind of unplugged and pulled from this tank where she spends her kind of time floating and predicting these crimes, she has to always be giving it this alien, out of their depth air, and she is so, so committed in how she's delivering that.
She just wanted her little girl back. But it was too late. Her little girl was already gone.
She's still alive.
She didn't die, but she's not alive.
Agatha. Just tell me, who killed your mother? Who killed Anne Lively?
I'm sorry, John, but you're gonna have to run again.
What?
Run!
It's a great performance, which in other hands just might not have worked. I think there was quite a lot of other names that preceded her in the casting pool for this one.
Yeah, Spielberg wanted Cate Blanchett.
That's what I read. It was Cate Blanchett, wasn't it? How interesting, and would have been...
Sure, to be honest, these are two actors that I think can do so much.
Yeah.
So I can imagine Cate Blanchett in it, but I would definitely be personally, you know, I wouldn't change that at all. But I can imagine Cate Blanchett.
I can imagine
in the same way I can imagine Samantha Morton in most. Actually, imagine Notes from the Scandal with Samantha Morton. Anyway,
gosh, I mean, you could, and it would be fascinating. I think what it would maybe lose with Cate Blanchett. I mean, I would still pay to see that. It'd be fascinating to see, but I think it would lose this the more vulnerable, natural sense.
Mm.
I'm not sure that Cate ever gives something which suggests vulnerable in the way that this character is.
For sure, yeah.
So she's doing marvellous things here.
And I feel like actually something with Cate Blanchett, or something that's, I guess, on this side, Samantha Morton brings is like, you totally believe these visions, like you buy mm-hmm. into this totally. Mm. Whereas actually, thinking of Cate Blanchett, I don't think I would trust. I don't know what it is about, and I don't mean that as like, I don't trust Cate Blanchett as a person. It's just something about her screen presence, where Samantha Morton is so like, authentically mm-hmm. present, like her characters are yeah. so open to the point to a fault. And I just, yeah, so it is interesting, yeah.
Mm. Well, definitely worth ruminating on. Everyone, think on that one at home, and whether you can see Cate Blanchett as a water-submerged, clairvoyant being.
Sure.
Tom Cruise, in this case, and she says that he set the bar very high about working with men. And I'm going to now cite something, and I'm going to cite it and say that it did make my eyebrow raise a little, so I don't want that to go uncommented on, but I also wanted to say it because it's interesting.
You can move your eyebrow.
Well, barely. The
Botox just a little
is
bit. Oh, I see.
Setting in big style. Just kidding. No Botox here. But no judgment if you do.
Nicole, because Nicole listens. Nicole Kidman, in case like a friend of ours who's called it's Nicole like, might
oh
be like,
God.
What are you talking about me about Botox?
Okay, so alongside Tom Cruise, she also cites Sean Penn and Johnny Depp as two others that she had amazing experiences working with on set. And hey, I don't doubt that at all. I believe that to be true.
And this is her, she's doing this when she's promoting She Said, right?
Exactly. So I think that's where it's a bit like, I guess it's interesting.
Who didn't she mention was Colin Farrell, who's also in Minority Report. Just putting names, just throwing shit into the fan and seeing where it lands.
Oh my gosh.
No, I'm sure Colin's lovely. Although back then, he probably was a wrecked head.
Yeah, I think it was around this time he probably was pretty tricky to work with. I think he has even spoken about himself of coming onto set at Minority Report very hungover often.
Oh, and you know, and one thing about Samantha Morton, listening to her speak, is you do not want to not be professional. And more than that, it's not even being professional, but her idea of what being professional is.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would find that as a person who produces film or content and all this, I would find that sort of personality on a set quite tricky. So the idea of someone not even being professional, you'd be like, warning signs, like, don't let Colin Farrell speak to Samantha Morton. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I it's really respectful to hear her talk about her process and how she approaches things. But also, like, there was one thing in an interview she's talking about, she wants scripts weeks in advance. Now that is, that from a technical or, you know, logistical point of view, you know, that puts other things potentially at risk. Do you know, I just think that is a wild thing to ask for, depending on what you're working on. But yeah, anyway, sorry, this is a long-winded way to just say, like, I imagine even if you were slightly not on form, Samantha Morton wouldn't be someone to get any sympathy from.
No, I think she respects, like you say, professionalism. I think she takes things, yes, she takes her craft very seriously. I think.
So she hates Colin Farrell. She did not vote for Colin Farrell at the Oscars this year.
Yeah, maybe that vote hasn't come through. But I think it's also just comes from this. I think she's just very confident in her ability. She's clearly very confident in her experience and the value of her experience and what she's learnt in her time as an actress. So, yes, I think there is a sense of not suffering fools. But she has spoken about this too, and was labelled as a difficult person to work with in the 90s and early noughties. But she cites that those are things that now wouldn't be the same, like being told to get naked on set at any command and all of these things. And she would go away and cry about it and come out with her like nipples covered in like plasters. And for that reason would be considered difficult. So I guess I'm also nervous thinking about that it's a name that has come from men kind of blackballing her by saying, oh, she's terrible to work with because she doesn't get her, like,
and that has
out.
Happened so much. A woman who is in any way, you know, raises their hand to voice a concern is difficult, but then a Daniel Day-Lewis can spend however long, you know, I don't know what it is, or Tom Cruise shouts at people on a set and we celebrate that because, you know, wow, he's teaching people to be respectful. But if a woman did that, no way would that be shared and would they be championed.
Yeah.
So I do understand the double standard, but still, regardless if it's Samantha Morton or Ralph Fiennes or whoever you want to bring up, gender is irrelevant. Someone asking for scripts or some of the things she says in the interview, I'm like, oh Lord.
I think though also she did suffer a stroke, and I think she cites that as a reason she wants scripts earlier so she can kind of get into the rhythm of them.
But then she also talks about just doing the work when she's been given size on the day.
Yeah, she said it's not just a case of wanting to sort of know the part. She wants to know the film in its entirety before she starts, and she will know every single line, and there won't be any wavering from that. She will be on form doing it right every time. It's kind of, that's what it sounds like when she talks, like it'll be a boom dropping into shot or a supporting actor walking into shot or something like this. It's not her. She's
it's Brendan
never
Fraser. It's not me. On The Whale, I could have done it in an hour, but Brendan couldn't. That's not true. Sorry, now I'm making that up. That is not factual.
Yeah, no.
But that's, you know, the tone of, yeah, exactly what you're
untrue.
Saying.
But yes, Minority Report, very, very exciting. Let's then from there go back to what is probably, I mean, she cites working with this person as, besides Ian Smith, the person who kind of pushed her when she was a teenager into certain roles, this filmmaker as the biggest impact on her career because of the confidence it gave her and the opportunity that this film gave her and just the genius that she cites this filmmaker as.
Jim Sheridan.
Afraid not. I also think this is the greatest living filmmaker potentially, and I'm not just biased because she's Scottish, but it is Lynn Ramsey, and it is, of course, Morven Caller.
I did not realise Lynn Ramsey was Scottish.
Oh, me. Please. Very Scottish.
but you, like, it makes sense because, well, Morven Caller is set in Scotland. She has her Scottish friend.
Mm-hmm. Ratcatcher, her first film. Yeah.
That is interesting. Yeah, I love Morven Caller too. That reminds me of my doing my master's in London, like exploring film. Yeah, I love Lynn Ramsey. I basically second all that. Yeah, Morven Caller is a real special film. And one that I really, I assume the, well, you know, we just had the Sight and Sound poll and it really surprised me Morven Caller isn't a film that was really high in that. But Morven Caller is a film following the titular character played by Morven Caller. Oh, sorry, played by... Oh, my Lord.
She is just
she's so good that she changed her name. Samantha Morton plays Morven Caller. And we start off with a death. And we spend time with Morven as they deal with the consequences, cope with the consequences. Well, also, maybe not the consequences of the death, but like what led to the death. And this is a character who is not 100% stable, and it is weirdly glorious to spend time with this character as they go shopping,
yeah,
as they go on a holiday with their friend, as they interact with the world.
Lana?
What?
Something bad's happened.
You're not pregnant, are you?
Gone.
He's left me.
He's left me.
Oh, he's probably just in one of his moods.
I don't know how much more again to say about this film because, there's bits that you discover as it goes, but it is glorious and it gives, you know, Lynn Ramsey clearly understands what Samantha Morton is capable of.
Yes.
And really utilizes her in such a terrific way. Like, this is one of the greatest performances in a British film.
Yeah.
And probably, I can't think of anything that would rival it now, looking at the list, Samantha Morton's best performance.
This, yeah, I would comfortably say this is her best performance, I would say.
On film, anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's plenty I also haven't seen, so there might be something I'm missing. But in terms of what I've seen, it's comfortably... And that's not even to slight anything else. I just think it's such an extraordinary performance. But I think this is an extraordinary film. I mean, I think Lynn Ramsey's... The four feature films she's made are a flawless four. To me, they're all top-tier films. Morven Caller's maybe my favourite of the four. Mm. It is a heaven-sent filmmaker-actor pairing. It is exactly, you see, Ramsey fully understands how to get the most out of Morton, and Morton is just absolutely bringing it, and you can tell that she is just fueled on by inspiration that she clearly was taking from Ramsey. They obviously inspired each other a tremendous amount because the outcome of this film is like magic has happened. Mm. She's heightening this character whilst... Ramsey has her poise to just be incredible. It's just a wonderful thing to see. And also we should say the cinematography by Alwyn H. Kuchler, I think his name is also amazing. There's so much shots and setups. Her lying beside a body with a like blinking Christmas tree in the background, and it keeps coming back to this and in on her face and her sat in front of a computer as she learns something very important which is going to drive the story. It's wonderful. It's just... perfect. I couldn't recommend this film more. But like you, I don't think I want to say too much about it because I think it is fairly still under-discovered. And finding this film is a real joy because it is an adventure you go in with this character and her friend played by the wonderful Kathleen McDermott. And I think this is the kind of the main thing outside of TV that she did. Mm. And their pairing is wonderful together. They made me laugh so much.
Me... Dazza. Steve.
Helga.
Olga.
Olga. Olga.
Olga. Olga.
Olga.
Olga.
There's amazing soundtrack choices. Just so much things. I think it's top to bottom brilliant.
And as something I rewatching it now, because I hadn't watched it since my master's, which is a while ago. I was really struck by its sort of its perception or representation of class. So I won't say why, but there's an interaction between, you know, upper middle class people and Morven, and she it's like this society is fucked anyway. Like, it's a male society, and there's a lot of conversations that could be had around Morven Caller and representation of gender inequality. But that scene in particular, it struck me so much because I just thought, this is so rich in a way that I thought this was brilliant anyway, but now I'm coming to it older and getting so much more out of it too. And I still don't think we get stories enough like this, where we hear characters are really fucked over by the system from a perspective that isn't, you know, a Mike Lee. And I love Mike Lee, but it's not from a perspective of someone who is not part of that world. Like, it's kind of almost like, let me tell you about, you know, the people that maybe are lower class or, you know, are suffering because of society. Even a Ken Loach, too. Right? Like, I think there's something that Morven Caller that is a bit more human and also casual just with the status of those characters in terms of class.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sure that's something that Lynn Ramsay very much feels herself. When You Were Never Really Here played at the London Film Festival a few years ago, I think I watched the second screening, but thankfully Lynn Ramsay was there again to introduce it. But she was so uncomfortable with it. Like, she had a couple of questions asked, and then she just, I can't remember what she did, but she just got embarrassed, said something, and literally ran off the stage, like scurried off, kind of like, oh, I'm done here. And it was kind of like laughed off, ah, ha, ha. But I think she's kind of like not into the whole bullshit of anything either, and kind of sees through everything. Fascinating. I'm always like, it goes too long between each with seeing what else she's got up her sleeve. And I'm so excited to see what is next.
Yeah, people should be throwing money at Lynn Ramsay.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what's happened. But I mean, people have dicked her over in the past with Alexa. She was supposed to do the Lovely Bones, and then we got the horrible Peter Jackson version. And I think that seeing what Lynn Ramsay had to offer there probably would have been incredibly special. So, sad things lost. And also there was the Jane, Get Your Gun, is that what that film
was
called?
Yeah, the Natalie Portman film. Wild, yeah.
Yeah, and was on board to do that for a long time and then didn't, unfortunate. But hopefully something very good coming soon. I cross my fingers and toes. Okay, let's then go on to the one that gets her second Oscar nomination. So you are going to also have to set this one up for us, as it is a Jim Sheridan. So take it away, Ireland.
So the setup of this movie is a family.
Yeah. correct.
It's a quest. No, it is a... So there's an Irish family. The father is played by Paddy Considine. Mother is Samantha Morton. And it's so like the daughters, there's two of them. I know they're played by the Bulger sisters. I want to say, like, in Ireland they became celebrities for this film. But Sarah, and I can't remember the second one's name, anyway, it doesn't matter. They're arriving to America from Ireland for a better life, because that's what we do. And they move into this big apartment block with loads of different people. It is not as glamorous and magical as the parents would have imagined, but it's really about them settling in, finding ways of being a family in this new world.
Everybody else goes trick-or-treating.
What's that?
It's what they do here for Halloween.
What do you mean, like help the Halloween party?
No, not help the Halloween party. You don't ask for help in America, you demand it. Trick or treat, you don't ask, you threaten.
You can't do that in our street.
Why not?
Because you can't threaten drug addicts and transvestites, that's why.
And Jim Sheridan has never been more sentimental than this film, I would say. He wrote it with his daughters.
Oh, right.
The script. And it you know, the music alone is so, like, everything is telling you this is emotional. So, you know, they're very poor. They're really struggling. You know, there's this, for example, there's a scene where Paddy Considine, they're at a fun fair, and his kid wants a teddy in some, like, a shoot 'em sort of game. What do you call those things at a stall? Anyway, a game.
He's throwing basically balls into a pipe and they have to go into the pipe.
Yeah, and it starts, you know, very low stakes and it keeps increasing.
Ooh, it's painful to watch.
It's painful to watch, but I think the music and, like, the characters' interactions are like, you can do it. Like, there's a magical nature to this where you're like, okay, we know really that he's going to win this teddy.
God, did you know? I didn't think it was going to happen.
Well, I just thought the way... Well, I guess it's more because, you know, Jim Sheridan had produced a film called Into the West in the 80s, and there's other things where I'm like, there's a magical tone to this,
okay,
which is an interesting thing to consider when you talk about Irishness, you know, like this sort of the charisma, or no, you know, there's just something, you know, if you pray to God or if you do this or you do that, then something good will happen. And yeah, I think, you know, it was a big film in Ireland anyway, back when it was released. I remember how it was marketed. I remember listening to Jim Sheridan and his daughters. I remember listening to the two sisters the two sisters in real life who played the two sisters in the film, all being on The Late Late Show in Ireland, which is a big TV show on a Friday night. And yeah, like, I hadn't watched that since it came out. I think my nostalgia for it is probably what would make it interesting to watch now.
Right.
It's, to me, it's very aged. Like, it's not so... There's not many layers to it. And there's also another really important part of the film is their neighbour, played by Jermyn Hounsou, who was also Oscar-nominated, right?
Yes.
And he, a bit like kind of the magical Irishness, but, like, ramped up even further, he is this sort of magical man that lives beside them. It's a stereotype. I mean, they're also, you know, he's dying of AIDS, but they're clear to say it's not from sex. Like, it's not from the, like, it's he got it through a needle from an injection which was prescribed to him by a doctor. Do you know, like, it's the most, like, clinical way to be getting AIDS. And I don't know, it just feels like a very sort of, like, look at this, these people are safe, and these are... It's just a neutered version of reality. There's no way New York was like that. So, yeah, and that's in all senses. From their neighbour being this magical black man to them winning all this money with their magical music at the carnival to, you know, the struggling actor, Paddy Considine, getting his part. I don't know. But I guess it's through a child's eyes. But that's all a long-winded way for me to say, like, it's not a film for me. But it was a film for me when I was, like, a teenager and saw it in the cinema and was surrounded by Irish people who were really nostalgic of Irish people emigrating and all this sort of thing.
Mm. Okay, it was my first time watching it. I enjoyed it. I actually maybe didn't actually see the Jermyn Hounsou character as being as problematic. I mean, as you say, sure, maybe I was just thinking, like, the theatricality of it was all right because he was a gay character, but that doesn't necessarily make it even any better.
But that's even more... Do you know, and this is another thing. I hadn't clocked his sexuality when I was younger, which happened with I can't think of the other film where this was... And I was like, oh my God, they're supposed to be gay. And I just think that's not clear.
Maybe he's not, and I'm assuming that he is. Gosh.
Why, because of... AIDS, sorry.
I don't know. Maybe I did make an assumption.
No, I don't know. Write in, tell us. We're not paying attention to the film.
Well, yes, but there probably is something very problematic there.
He's good, though.
He is very good. Yeah. I mean, everyone is good. Interestingly, Samantha Morton is, of course, very good here. She's always very good. But I am surprised that of all the great films they could have chosen to give her and another Oscar nomination for, that this was the one. I think she's solid, but I can only assume that this film was riding a real swell of support.
Oh, yeah, people would have known Jim Sheridan.
Yeah, I mean, she's great. I'm not...
She's playing an Irish mammy sort of part. You know, I just think that's the sort of thing Oscars love. Like, even look at The Fabelmans recently with Michelle Williams. You're playing a mother who is so committed to their children, and they are arguably a lead. Like, this is the other thing. Like, Samantha Morton is supporting, actually, Paddy Considine's story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't begrudge her. Also because when I was younger, of course, delighted that an Irish movie did so well. I mean, their accents are not great, is the other thing maybe that is worthwhile to Irish listeners, who when we put the audio clip in, they'll be like, maybe they could have worked on that a bit more.
Mm.
But yeah, and I think Paddy Considine's really great in it too.
He's
a good actor.
I think everyone is good, and there is a real magic and charm to it. I'm glad I've seen it. Yeah, I think that's sort of how I fall on it.
And love, Samantha Morton has a moment where she's really, really horny, gets the children out of the house, and basically convinces Paddy Considine to have sex with her. And I thought it's really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. No, that moment was fun, and there is really cute, fun moments throughout it, which do work well and kind of stand out. I think she's an interesting nomination choice, so I certainly don't begrudge it. Maybe slightly surprising given what other choices there could have been.
Well, Morven Callor would have been...
Well, yes, there we go. I mean...
But then how could you not vote for her to win?
Yeah.
Well, I say that, but then as we know, a lot of the time the best performance doesn't win those Oscars,
But maybe in America makes more sense talking about that maybe the accent could have been even wilder. It was Kate Winslet was going to be doing this role, and then because she couldn't, Samantha was rushed into meetings with Jim Sheridan, gets the role, does it. So it was a very quick turnaround for her. So probably just adds to this sort of like, ooh, I'm, you know, thrown out of my element into a world I don't know. Yeah, maybe there's more to it than I'm kind of thinking now. But it was charming. Glad I've seen it. Yeah.
And it benefits from Paddy Considine and Samantha Morton not feeling like big movie stars.
That's very true, I think. Yes, there is a sense of authenticity to them. Just kind of trying it out, rumbling into town, trying to make it work. It feels... Yeah, they do feel kind of like, yeah, this makes sense.
And Jamin Hunchso is absolutely gorgeous in this film.
Wonderful.
I just feel like that's an important part of the... I mean, honestly, this time it's like, God, I really appreciate you. I like Gladiator also. Honestly, this man, I think, is the most handsome.
Good.
He should be a leading man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
He's brilliant. All right, so that's those three. In terms of kind of other awards, kind of traction that were coming out of those, Minority Report, she gets a Saturn Award win. She wins Best British Actress at the Empire Film Awards. She gets another BIFFA, well, win. She gets a BIFFA win for Morven Callor. Yes, of course, deservedly. And then alongside the Oscar nomination for In America, the SAGs gave them the Ensemble nomination. She got another BIFFA nomination, Critics' Choice Awards, Independent Spirit Awards, Satellite Awards nomination. So lots of recognition around this time. Following on from that, though, if we then move a little bit into the future, so 2004 now, she gains another BIFFA nomination. BIFFA is what you're going to learn about this. For her role in Enduring Love, which is the balloon crash film.
With so many people in it.
With lots of people in it. Daniel Craig, Risa Fans. I actually only watched that for the first time quite recently. It's quite something.
Ian McEwan, isn't it, book?
Yes, it's an Ian McEwan book, which maybe then makes sense because I think his...
Drama.
Literature... is often unusual. Here we also get Michael Winterbottom's Code 46. This is where she works with Johnny Depp in The Libertine as well. In 2005, we see her in River Queen, where she plays an Irish woman caught within the turbulent wars in 1860s New Zealand during the British colonisation. The film was actually a big success in New Zealand and earned Samantha a New Zealand Screen Award nomination. 2006 now, we see Samantha star in the Tom Hooper-directed, Peter Morgan-written TV movie Longford, where she is playing the very infamous serial killer here in the UK, Myra Hindley. This earns her only Emmy nomination. She also gets a BAFTA TV Award nomination and wins a Golden Globe for this performance. And then 2007, another particularly fruitful year, she stars in Expired. We have her in Harmony Korine's Mr. Lonely, where she plays a Marilyn Monroe impersonator who meets a Michael Jackson impersonator and brings him back to her Scottish commune, where she only lives with a variety of other impersonators. So one I haven't seen, but now very intrigued to see it. Yeah. We also have her in Control this year. This is the film about Joy Division frontman Ian Curtis. She plays his wife Debbie. This, and surprisingly to me, is what earned her her only BAFTA film nomination so far. BIFFA weren't sleeping on it, though. This was her sixth BIFFA nomination for this one. But yes, no, she is great in Control. Control is a really interesting film. Anton Corbijn, isn't it? Had also worked with her earlier, and now I'm blanking on what that was. Maybe there wasn't earlier than this. Anyway, blip. And then a film I haven't seen, and maybe this is a gay crime, I'm not sure. We also have her as Mary Stuart, a.k.a. Mary Queen of Scots in Elizabeth the Golden Age.
So you've never seen her? No. So I feel like that film nowadays is remembered as a bit of a joke for a few reasons. Mainly because the clip that was shared a lot, including at the Oscars, was Kate screaming. He's like, "I can command the wind too, sir." And Kate Blanchett even was quite cringed at having to watch that clip. She is on the same scale as that clip in that movie. Her Scottish accent's wild to me. I remember seeing in the cinema and being like, what the hell is happening with her career? She is so villainous. I guess this is also a thing about watching, say, the Elizabeth the Golden Age in Ireland, to watch, you know, someone who we would have celebrated as a Catholic who would have fought against the repression of England. So, like, basically our heroes being treated as such a villain. Like, it's a really one-note performance, I would say. But okay. I haven't watched it in years. But yeah, campy. I wish the new one with Saoirse Ronan was more campy, to be honest.
Okay,
and that's pretty camp anyway.
This
is camp, yeah.
Mm. Okay, well, maybe I'll get there. In 2008, during an interview, Samantha revealed that a couple of years previous, whilst having a party at her house, this old house in Shoreditch that she'd bought, or Spitalfields, this kind of dream house that she'd always seen and wanted and got it, but very, very old, she was hosting a party and a very old 17th century bit of plaster, like basically the ceiling, fell on her. And off the back of that, this is where she suffered a quite debilitating stroke. So had a 3-week stint in hospital where she suffered partial paralysis and loss of vision, and then spent the next 18 months or so taking a break from acting. The first thing that she would go on to work on after this, and it was also thankfully they were giving her the space and waiting for her, was Charlie Kaufman in his film Synecdoche, New York, where in a wonderful, wildly wonderful ensemble of great and talented actors, she is one of the absolute standouts in there. She's so good and gets to age alongside Philip Seymour Hoffman's lead character, I think over around a 30-year span.
I wish we had this when we were young. All those years in between.
My heart aches so much for you.
We're here, Caden. I'm here.
And just really wonderful. She cites this as being a really great character to play, where she often tends to gravitate towards folk who have a bit more of a bleak edge to them. She just found this person to be quite joyful to play. And I think at this point, it was probably a great thing for her to do, even though they were doing like 20-hour days in and out of the prosthetics as they were kind of being aged. It was very, very intense, but she was super grateful of the experience and kind of talks about it as almost being part of like a sort of theater community for a while and mm-hmm. and found the experience very rewarding. Cynic Doki wins for its ensemble acting at both the Independent Spirit and Gotham Awards. The same year, so 2008, she stars in Irish horror film The Daisy Chain, which earns her a 7th BIFFA nomination. Irish horror, have you seen The Daisy Chain?
No.
No? Oh, well.
I don't even, I don't know if I ever heard of the film before.
Ah, oh well. I don't know how well it was reviewed, so maybe it's not the one, but she got some attention for it, so I'm sure there's some value there. In 2009, she stars in The Messenger as a widow of the Iraq War. For her performance, she's nominated for the Indie Spirit and Critics' Choice Awards and wins or receives further nominations and assortment of Critics' Circle Awards for this performance as well. In 2009, a very important career move for her, we see her co-write and direct the TV movie The Unloved, which was a semi-autobiographical work from Samantha, as it tells the story of a girl who's growing up in the care system. She won a BAFTA for her direction and work in this, and is still actually the only thing that she has directed so far. We then see Samantha take a short hiatus from screen work to focus on her family and personal life. She returns to screens in 2012 with roles in John Carter and David Cronenberg's Cosmopolis. I guess another sci-fi entry in her canon where she is a standout amongst a fabulous cast.
Are you talking about John Carter or...?
I was talking about Cosmopolis, but yeah. you can tell us how great she is.
She's voicing an interesting kind of supporting character. I mean, there's a reason why John Carter is A, forgotten, and B, didn't continue.
Well, she had a great time working on John Carter. I think it was her first time working within the sort of Disney machine, I guess, that or the kind of massive Hollywood machine. I know she'd been in blockbusters before, but this was the first time in this sort of kind of working with the machine studio behind it. And she actually really liked working
with that man in the loincloth.
With him, but also the director. I think it's, what, Andrew Stanton?
Disney guy, yeah.
So, yeah, she found it a positive experience and actually was sad that it didn't continue.
Aww.
In 2013, and this is always a very interesting one that I forget until I read it again. So Samantha was the original voice of the AI system in Spike Jonze's Her. And when she was performing in this film, she was actually on set interacting with Joaquin Phoenix. So, like, I think literally hiding under desks and things and chatting to him and playing off of him and behind the camera and all of this stuff. But was ultimately replaced in post by Scarlett Johansson. However, she does still have a co-producing credit on the film. I'm not sure if I've seen her talk about her feelings about this. Maybe she was like, yeah, it's grand, it's the right choice, I'm not sure. Mm. Scarlett Johansson is wonderful as the voice in that film, I will say, but I would have been intrigued to have...
Yeah, I'd be so interested. I mean, I'd be more interested in hearing both Spike Jonze and Samantha Morton talk about that in terms of creatively why. Because I guess on the face of it, it would be like, well, Scarlett Johansson has a very obviously sultry sort of sexualized voice in a way Samantha Morton doesn't naturally have. So it would make me think, I don't know, it would just be interesting to know.
Yeah, it might have been a very surface decision. But Spike Jonze is a very interesting filmmaker, so...
Oh, yeah, and I think both of those are... It's not that I don't think that it was a good idea. It's just more I'm interested. Because, I think Scarlett Johansson does a great job in that film. In a film that I really like, I should say.
I think hers brilliant.
And, I mean, offline I talk about Amy Adams a lot, but I think Amy Adams in Her is one of my favourite performances of hers. I think she's terrific. I really love it. I haven't watched Her in a long time.
No, I don't think I've watched it since it came out, but I was very taken with it at the time. I'm going to trot through a few here. So between 2013 and 2022, Morton stars in a variety of films like Decoding Annie Parker, Miss Julie, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which I guess important to highlight because I think it is her most seen highest box office film, I guess, understandably, because it's a Harry Potter.
And she's important to that story.
She is.
She shouts the house down and has such a wonderfully campy villain atmosphere. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. And she says that she also loved this experience, that she had a lot of fun. She was glad it was a one film arc, that it didn't continue.
Spoiler.
Beyond that, spoiler. But yeah, she is.
And she has a great death scene. It's like. Does she, is she like exploded or something? I don't know. There's something really fun that I can't remember now, but great. I remember being like, oh, there she goes.
Yeah. So and the other time that she sort of mixed with this sort of big studio machine and also had a good experience. She just seems to have pretty good experiences when she's on set, I think. What else have we got here? We've got Two for Joy as well. And then we get a lot more TV work during this time. So we have her in roles in The Last Panthers, Rillington Place, I Am, the BBC series, and I think it's I Am...
Or Channel 4. Kirstie,
or Channel 4 yeah. series, I Am Kirstie, which... And that series continues to be very well received. So lots of exciting actresses working across that... What would you call it? Like an anthology series documenting the lives of different women. We also have Harlots, where she plays a brothel madam, and The Walking Dead, where she plays a character called Alpha, and she actually cites this as one of her favourite ever roles, if not her favourite ever role, because she gets to flex acting muscles in ways that she never otherwise got to, kind of working in horror in a way that she had in. She thinks that for kind of a villain TV character, she is very complex and layered, and coming from a darker background herself, and really put her all into it and had a great time doing it. So she loved working on The Walking Dead. And it also gave her a kind of renewed recognition that she never had because of the fans of the show and the comic books that the show is kind of based on. So getting a very different level of recognition, which, why not? And then trotting into 2002 now, her TV success continues as well. She's playing Catherine de' Medici in The Serpent Queen. And then, as we discussed, it's also a key year in cinema for Samantha. So she takes on a leading role in Save the Cinema, which you have seen?
Yeah, it's... sorry, that sounded really enthusiastic. It's not very good, but it's very, like, well-intentioned, if overly sentimental and not very enjoyable film where she is just really enthusiastic about cinema. Essentially, it's about, like, creating a cinema and having Jurassic Park and there being like success and bringing people together to love film. And Jonathan Pryce is there and Samantha Morton.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe not the one to seek out from this year. But then we have her performances in the other kind of big name awards contender films. So we have, as we mentioned, her playing Brendan Fraser's ex-wife Mary in The Whale. And as Zelda Perkins, who was a victim of Weinstein abuses in She Said. So we have spoken about these films a little already. She is obviously great to watch in both of them and is giving fantastic performances against otherwise very talented casts.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to add on these films?
Yeah, maybe on She Said. So Zelda Perkins... is a real person, like was really Harvey Weinstein's assistant. And the film, She Said, really focuses on this sort of quest of the journalist to uncover the truth. So by the time we meet Samantha Morton, which is some way into the film, we have hints of what has happened with Harvey Weinstein. And, you know, there's been conversations with people like Ashley Judd. But Samantha's one scene is where you properly have somebody tell you everything and they're powerful. Like there's a powerful presence and saying like, this is what was asked of me. I knew this. It's just a really striking scene in a film that I really like. And I do think it's underappreciated. she's just really, really great in it. It's really, really not that easy to come in with actors. Like, the co-stars there are, like, Carey Mulligan and, oh, my God, why has my mind gone
Zoe
blank?
Kazan.
Yeah, Zoe Kazan. And just give this terrific performance of somebody who has all this baggage.
I had to have their permission if I wanted to contact a therapist or speak to an accountant. I was never to speak to any other media now or hereafter existing about it. Jodie, this is bigger than Weinstein. This is about the system protecting abusers.
And just has, like, what, is it 5 minutes at most to communicate them? It's just really terrific. And I really recommend She Said. I think it's full of really great performances and really really gives space to the women that did come forward, like Ashley Judd, who plays herself, Jennifer Ely, who plays another character, another character based on a real person, and Samantha Morton. I think it's really, really powerful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, like I said, one of my personal nominees of the year. And I guess you can sense, as She Said herself, she had a lot of fire in her belly as an actress working during this time to come on and tell the story. And she has a huge amount of respect for Zelda Perkins, has met her, is friends with her now.
Well, I assume Harvey Weinstein produced Sweet and Lowdown. He did lots of Woody Allen movies.
That's very true. There's a likelihood she did work directly with him, probably.
Yeah, but again, I don't know that for a fact, but definitely would have been circling the same time. And being a woman in the film industry of that time, who openly talks about not wanting to do photo shoots or being, you know, a celebrity on her own. Like, I can imagine how tricky it would have been, and how, I don't know. She's just a really fascinating person at an interesting time.
Yeah.
Like, we would never, you know, in the, you know, 40s and 50s, we would never have had an actor from England who would have come from, you know, a lower class to become a two-time Oscar nominee. I don't think that would happen. I can't think of an example. And that probably goes straight into, you know, the 90s, probably when it could happen. You're under, you know, Labour government and all these sorts of things, and opportunities that maybe wouldn't have been open. Like, in America, you have this sense of you can dream and be anybody. That is not, from living in England, that is not something I think is possible. And if it is, it's very unlikely. Maybe I'm being, like, anti-English now, but I just, you know, that sense of, or that ability to have been so successful at a profession which for so long, you know, would champion people like Laurence Olivier or Vivian Leigh or that sort of, even a Kate Winslet, you know, people that have really studied and have gone through a system. And Samantha Morton doesn't quite fit that. Like, she came through the Royal Court at a time where they were doing more experimental stuff.
Right.
It is not the traditional trajectory of a British actor.
Yeah.
And now she's going to do music. That's what she's working on now, an album.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I completely missed that. Do you know anything more on that?
Not really.
Okay, well, we'll await the album. My goodness, okay.
.. No, she definitely is. That and Mamma Mia 3. No, joking. I wish Mamma Mia 3 was happening.
Oh, she's got it all. She's got it all. But yes, other than She Said, also The Whale, I think not too much to add on that other than, and I think, I suspect, and this might be me projecting, I'm not sure how much she thinks of the finished product of The Whale, but Darren Aronofsky was definitely someone on her bucket list. She loved working with him. She was a big fan of Brendan Fraser, loved working with him.
Did she say something? Did she not
like it? It was just like when she was asked about her feelings on it, it feels very much like she's like, thinks about it, and then she goes, what did Darren get out of you in this role?
Oh,
like, what was it? And she was like, I always wanted to wear, and it sort of feels like going through that.
You see, I mean, Samantha Morton is very open and honest, but I still think there's something kind of bullshitty when actors say stuff like that, no matter how genuine they come across. But yeah, sure, Darren Aronofsky is someone who actors would want to work with. Why not? But she probably would say that about your man who directed Fantastic Beasts or...
No, I think she really did with Darren. Okay. I think she said when she moved to New York in the late 90s, I think probably to work on the Woody Allen film, that was around the time Pi came out. And at that point in time, she was like, oh, who is this person? Everyone was talking about him. I think she'd long wanted to work with him. So ultimately, probably the reason she did get involved in The Whale was for that. And hey, she's great. So
she is terrific, yeah.
Why not? Anyway, quite neatly, because I've spoken a lot about BIFFA nominations, we can wrap up this career overview of Samantha in that last year she also got, I guess we'd call it her ninth BIFFA honour, but in this case it's winning the Richard Harris Award for Outstanding Contribution by an Actor to British Film. And I think that award really does feel deserved. You know, she really does deserve that. Constantly delivering great work. Even if, like we say, she is not always celebrated as loudly as she ought to have been. So, yay for you, Samantha.
Sorry, there's a British Independent Film Award named after the Irish actor Richard Harris, which is given to British people.
Apparently so.
What the hell? What the hell? This is like when they, you know, Sky News is like, oh, the British have done so well. Paul Mescal, nominate for Best Actor. And you're like, go... away. So I was going to curse. That's really bad. But like, come on, guys. Learn your stuff. Anyway, good for Richard Harris. Great Irish actor. And, you know, if you wanted an award, you know, I'd want it named after him, maybe. Particularly with For Drinking, although I couldn't keep up with what rumoredly he could drink.
Oh, wow. All right. The things we're learning. But yes, that's Samantha. Yay.
Yay for Samantha. And to round all this off, what role do you hope for her? Like, and you know, and I guess something we never usually talk about either, like what would you hope that role would do? Do you want, would that open doors? It would just be a fantastic film to watch.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so for a performer who brings so much complexity, I would love to see her get to work with a filmmaker who is sort of ticking all of the boxes when they work. And I'm thinking if he was to do another English language feature, maybe Bong Joon-ho, which we saw in Parasite, this kind of genre traversing masterwork where the actors get to do so much because they are working on so many different levels and doing so many different things within the bounds of one story and one film. And I would love to see her do that. And I think, to answer your question, because it would allow us to get to see her fulfill a lot of things that otherwise she maybe hasn't been able to, all within one film. So getting to do something broader, more complicated again, and working with another auteur, which she likes to do, so someone who's really going to challenge her and give her great material to work with. I suspect that Samantha is probably in good footing based on her 2022 to continue to be seen in very high-profile work. So I don't know that doors need to be opened. I think it's just let's pay attention again. And I'd want it to be a lead role. Maybe that's the key. I'd want it to be a lead role in a Bong Joon-ho film. What that film actually looks like, I don't mind, because he has done such a variety as well. We've got the kind of sci-fi snowscapes of something like Snowpiercer. Mm. That would be fascinating. But maybe within the realms of kind of family drama, dialed up to 10 of Parasite would also be fabulous. So that's my pitch. What about yours?
Mine equally. I put her in a lead role, something that's complex that really positions her as one of the best actors working today. And I was, you know, this is an obvious one, but Todd Field, who already with, you know, Sissy Spacek in The Bedroom, Kate Winslet in Little Children, and Kate Blanchett in Tar, clearly understands how to write parts that will allow actors to showcase all of the range. So I absolutely think Samantha Morton would more than meet that sort of performance style and challenge and would be terrific. So I don't really know what that would be, but I guess if you're falling in line with those films, it would be a character who all of a sudden is under a lot of stress.
Right.
For whatever reason. I can't even think of what the setup would be, but it could be someone who's like, okay, fuck, I need to deal with this now. Or, as we see in most of these parts, like, I'm not going to deal with it, but by not dealing with it, I'm making it worse. So, yeah, I'd love to see that combination. And I would hope that the industry would be very open to celebrating her and then positioning her like some of her contemporaries who are considered some of the best actors ever. But yeah, I don't think Samantha Morton would have got those opportunities. She even talks about Harlots a few years ago, that being made for Helena Bonham Carter, who, as much as I like Helena Bonham Carter, I don't think there's a competition between who is the stronger performer. There is a competition. Well, there's also not a competition in terms of who's more commercially viable and probably more, you know, ready to go on Graham Norton or do all those things. Like, Helena Bonham Carter is obvious who you'd go with if you wanted to sell your product. But yeah, I just think Samantha really should be up there.
Yeah.
Or you know, and I'm not saying she needs to do all those that press and stuff. Let her have this Todd Field film, don't do any press, and just enjoy the process.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Regardless of the awards.
Yeah.
Like, I think Morven Callor, you know, we're finishing this Oscar season, and, you know, I think any of the winners this year potentially will maybe match, but will not surpass what Samantha Morton's doing in Morven Callor, say. And that just goes to show you, like, what is the point of it? But it's a lovely event, and it gets people talking about film and watching film. But Samantha Morton is as good as anyone this year.
Yeah, for sure. So yay, Samantha.
Yay, Samantha. So yeah, spoiler, we do love her.
Yeah, no, she's amazing, and may she continue to do wonderful things.
And do you think she will be an Oscar winner in future?
I think she certainly could be, yes. If it was to happen, I think it would be in the supporting category.
Yeah, for sure.
In which case, yes, I definitely could. I think enough people did talk about how great she was, and She Said, even though it didn't find itself kind of near the awards conversation enough, that I think we will see her continuing to work in the sorts of films that find themselves in that conversation. So I certainly think she will be back in the Oscar conversation. Do I think she'll get more nominations? Yes, I do. Do I think she will win? I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm very excited for her. And yeah, I just think the only way is up. Or we're in a good trajectory.
Yes, exactly. Anywho, that is Samantha. If our lovely listeners wanted to reach out to us and tell us which Samantha Morton films we missed or who we should focus our attentions on next, where might they be able to find us, Michael?
They can find us on Instagram or Twitter at @don'tknowher_pod. And we have an email address, which is don'tknowherpod@gmail.com. And you can find us there. We, you know, share loads of fun bits on social media about the careers of people that we talk about, and also just champion people that who are doing well. And please do like, review, share us with anyone you think would enjoy it. Reviewing us actually is a brilliant way for other people to find us. So please do that if you've enjoyed. Just take a few minutes out of your day. We're not asking for money. We're not asking for any more of your time? Well, we are. But we just in a nice way. Please do that. Thank you so much for listening. And please do join us next time when we start a new set of episodes focused on ... to be revealed in the next episode.
What mystery. On that, we shall close the door on this Oscars miniseries. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful day wherever you are. Goodbye.
Bye.